I'm going to write a word. I hope it comes on the screen. I'm going to write it very low down. Anybody who recognizes it may speak. Is it there? What does it mean, please? Latin for bee, a busy little honeymaker. Now, actually, before it was meaning bee to the Romans, the same word was Egyptian for what? Bull. Yes, it goes with cock when you're talking. Bull. It's also the name Joseph. Can you recognize Joseph there? Well, the I and the J are the same, so we can put that there. Can't we? P and PH are the same, so we'll put that there. Yes? That's what we'll do for an absolute, which is what it represents. So if we remember that the Hebrew doesn't use vowels in the body of the word, but subscripts or superscripts them, there is the word Joseph. That was his title during the period when he was in charge of the corn in Egypt, which made Egypt very powerful, because when other people had famines, Egypt didn't. So they had to go and buy corn at high prices, and Joseph was in charge. And Joseph means affirmation of distribution point. I'm going to show the absolute origin of this, and we're going to write A for the absolute. See that wobbly line? That is vibratory. The absolute is vibratory. It is power, and it vibrates. Now you know that vibration is an alternation of condensation or precipitation, compression, and decompression. Everything whatever in the universe is vibratory. Gross matter is vibratory, the atom is vibratory, the electron, the proton, the neutron, the lepton, the quarks. You know, quarks are vibratory too. Three quarks make one neutron or one proton. They're all vibratory. Now, A is our symbol for the absolute. Is it too high to be seen? No. Is it too small to be seen? Well, it should be drawn infinitely large and infinitely small. But we will be satisfied with this mediocre representation, a vibratory absolute. Now, the word absolute is ab. Absolute, which means Father, or power that put us here. Sol, or Sol, the Son, and Ute, the expressive Holy Spirit. So the word absolute is a triplicity of powers. It means the Father or generative power of infinity, who produces solo entities, monads, beings, entities of circumscribed order, which are called solo, precisely because of their circumscription. And it comes forth through the monadic, through the encapsulated sphere of being, into expression. So if I were, I'll just move up a little bit, to draw an A again, like this. I'm going to analyze it into a triad and two legs. It isn't accidental that these forms are like this. They're the product of thousands of years of deep meditation on a method of symbolical thinking. That letter R, the Aleph of the Hebrew, the Alpha of the Greek, R letter in English A, is the prime breathing. When you relax your tongue in your mouth and just open your mouth and let air come out, it says, Now, if we say we are using a primary phonetic symbol for absolute spirit, and contained in the glyph of it is this: it is a threefold function appearing as a twofold polarity. Threefold for this reason: it has form, it is sentient, and it is operative. Form, feeling, function. Form, the Greek word is idea, definition, determinability. Any kind of clarity depends on definition. Idea is clear form. But every idea is an energy behaving, and is therefore a power which is sentient and feels itself. So every idea feels that it is an idea, and the form is Latin for Greek idea, the form of the idea is felt. So a triangular feeling differs from a square feeling. The triangle is used as a symbol, even in the Vatican, for this precise significance: a union of simultaneous presentation of form, feeling, volition. Form, feeling, activity. So when you see the triangle, remember, each point on it signifies, and each side signifies. We have idea, we have feeling, and we have drive, cognition, urge, push, will. I think, I feel, I do. This is the same trinity. So when we look at that triangle, we have to remember that we are talking about this mysterious triplicity of aspects of the absolute. I shall now wind back a bit. I'm going to represent this R slightly bigger. From the point of invisible pre-creational unity there is an apparent polarization there, and the polarization of the absolute is towards sentience and power. The absolute polarizes as sentience and power. And you know that it polarizes because we can actually feel what we call a potential of action. I look at my hand, I decide I will move it. I can feel that I can move it. My feeling that I can move it and I'm not moving it is a feeling of a potential. Potential means power held in. I feel the power held in, by which, if I release it, I can wave. Wave is an action. Point is an action. Punch is an action. I can feel it without doing it. Now this is the beginning of freedom and the beginning of misery, because this differentiation of sentience and power, the fact that I can feel that I can do it, and the fact that because I feel I can and yet may not, means that I can feel potentials which may never become actual. Now this is a polarization of the absolute, but at the moment it is a human being that is discussing it. So I'm going to draw a line across here, and now we have the same triangle of the absolute. I'll put an A on there to remind us that the absolute polarizes as S and P, but all this is within the big absolute. So the absolute has got a representation of itself as point of origin of a polarization, sentience and power. I can do things without thinking and get into trouble. I can do them without feeling. I rush about blindly until I bang my head on the door, and then my sentience becomes obvious because I feel the pain. So I can push about without bothering to feel the effect until I hit an obstacle. So that's one danger. Power without sentience. The unconscious drunken idiot. He doesn't know that he's just beaten his friend unconscious and knocked him in the canal and he's now drowned. Only tomorrow when he has to identify the body will he become aware that at the time he gave that punch he was not sentient, he was not aware of it. Power without sentience. Power so dominant and sentience so subdued that an action that is entirely destructive can be done without awareness by the doer that he is doing it. Have you ever flown in a rage and done something which you have later regretted? No. Silence. Well, I know a fellow who cherished a cup for some reason or other for a long time until he got very mad at cherishing it. And he'd been on the very best quality methylated spirits and smashed the cup. And the next day he found it in pieces and said to his wife, "Who broke the cup?" And she said, "You did." And he couldn't remember having broken it. And that was power without sentience. But the opposite danger is sentience without power. Well, you feel there must be something I can do that's significant. There must be some mark I can make upon the world. I can feel this tremendous potential. Can you feel it? We can solve all the problems of the human race. But can we solve them? Can you feel you can solve everything? You can solve your marital differences of opinion, potentially. The other day a fellow was fined. I believe he was a publican. He charged men £1 to go in the pub. Women, he did not charge. And when he was declared to be breaking a law, this was sexual discrimination. Men had to pay and women didn't. And he was duly legally approached and convicted of this dreadful crime of discrimination, sexual discrimination. Men pay £1 and women didn't. And his reply, his justification was, "Well, I let the women in free because they don't cause any trouble. They don't cause trouble." At that point, Stuart Hall nearly fell off his seat. Looked at Cameron and said, "Women don't cause trouble." Now, potentially they don't. And potentially men are intelligent and can tolerate it when it occurs. You see, we can be potential in our sentience, and we can be powerful in our sentience. But the problem is, how do we get hold of our power and our sentience and converge them to the same point? Now the absolute has done it absolutely there. So what we want is then a reflection of the upper triangle there, and I'm going to write I there. The individual human being who is considering this problem. I am a human being, you're all human beings. We are considering the problem of a polarization in us of sentience and power. The fact that I can make a mark if I want, I'll use my power to make a mark. I have a potential of crossing it off. I won't cross it off yet. I'll just discuss it. I could cross it off with a George cross or an Andrew cross. I won't, but I could. I'm full of potentials. I've got all sorts of ways of crossing it off. One would be to wet it like that. Now I've dirtied my finger. You know, every time you do something, something horrible happens. Every solution is a precipitation of a problem. I don't even know whether that ink is poisonous. I don't know whether he's a mark unfit for babies. What did you say? Fast verschließen. Nachgebrauch. How very nice. It says that we place the cap after use. Meanwhile, I don't know whether I'm poisoning myself. I think I'd better test it. Now, if I get worse throughout the evening, it's possible, but not certain that might be the cause. In any case, I've stained my finger and my reputation as gentle purple. But instead of doing that, I could have scribbled on the dot, like that. And got rid of it. I have an infinite number of potentials, ways of doing things. But which one I select excludes some others. And we have to be very careful of this. We are individuals. Each one of us is an individual with a polarization of sentience and power. We feel that we can do marvelous things. I feel I could model a David like Michelangelo. If I had the time and a piece of marble and a chisel and a course called a further education, I could do it. I can feel it. All I need is a knowledge of anatomy and something to do with the chemistry of marble and fissure and all kinds of little things. They're all acquirable because they're all in the Encyclopedia Britannica. So all I need to do is read them up and then I can do it. Those are my potentials. Now, funnily enough, our potentials are all infinite. But it's the actualization of our potentials that is the problem. And the actualization of a potential requires the convergence of our sentience and our power. We must bring them down like this to the point of individuation. Now what happens if we manage to make SP convergent in the human individual? We have produced a peculiar thing, a descent of the absolute into incarnation in the individual. The meaning of ossification, divinization, and equivalent terms means the individual has to get his sentience saturated with power, and his power saturated with sentience, so that he knows himself as well as the absolute does. And we don't think this is impossible, because one Jewish gentleman said, "Be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect." Your Father in heaven is the absolute. There's a recommendation. Be so perfect. How is the absolute perfect? The absolute is perfect because his sentience and his power do not quarrel. They are convergent. In that point there, they are not differentiated. Here they're differentiated, and here they're differentiated as individual human being. Now you notice we've written the mystical word our peace, haven't we? And it doesn't simply mean a bee collecting honey, or a bull, or a distribution point. It means the absolute individual who has polarized his sentience and his power consciously, so that he can actually know what he can do and do what he knows. A being that knows what he can do and can actually do what he knows is a divine being, even if he's incarnate in a body. And when you get upset and frustrated by your inability, it's only because of the non-convergence of the power and the sentience in your being. Draw your sentience, and sentience is a means whereby you get your knowledge and your wisdom. Draw your sentience to a point, and in the point of your self-awareness, You are both sentient and powerful. You converge S and P together. Now, I'm going to move the absolute top enough, yes. I imagine we forget the absolute for a moment, because all things are modalities of the absolute, so we can ignore it for the moment. We've now got S, P, I. And that word means an issuing power individuating. Now when the power individuates, the sentience is watching the power, and the power is watching the sentience. And in the sentience you feel your potentiality of doing amazing things. And you have the power to do them, providing your sentience and your power don't split apart and get lost. They split apart when you feel your sentience and forget to initiate your power. Or when you're so busy being powerful, you forget your sentient awareness of the possibilities of a situation. When you individuate in that manner, there is a fight within you as an individual of sentience and power. And that fight vibrates the R, absolute, in the individual, and the glyph for the vibration is the letter R. So we've now written spire, spear, the spear in aspiration. As the individual differentiates, it gives rise to a fivefold differentiation. This is just by vibration. Are there any sonic engineers in the room who can tell us about the nature of vibration in clear scientific terms? When vibrations occur, they have frequency. When they have frequency, they can actually either agree or disagree, like waves on the ocean. You can have what is called a train of waves. You can have wave pattern interferences. Or you can even get, as in the case of the laser, wave coherence. Now the five that it breaks into are physical body, I put B for body there, F for feeling, M for mentation, and I'm going to put here an O for comprehension and the V for volition. That's a nice word, bumph. You'll be fine now, it's a good word, and it means what it says. We all have these five within our field of awareness. We've got a gross physical body, which is the persistent presentation in our consciousness. It's there when we go to sleep at night, and it's there when we wake up in the morning. So the body is sort of a good stabilizer. Lots of inertia. It won't go away very easily. We call it the lowest one because we take it for granted. But really, the VOMF are telescoped into the body. A movement that way, the movement towards incarnation. Original volition, that means initiation of a process, setting up of a goal, sets up a seed, a samach, prop, a definition of an aim, and then proceeds to mentate about it, and then sentiently feel for and against, and then embody. The movement of body contains feelings, mentations, logos, intellections, volitions. They're all in the body. And this individual here, we call the monad, I'll write monad there, the spiritual monad, not to be confused with the empirical ego, which comes out of this being. Then I'll put ego. Is that visible? Yeah. And the empirical ego is built out of body encountering physicality of other bodies and material objects in the environment. We've written S-P-I-R, and then each one of these talents coming down has to be pinned. So I'm going to pin the five crosses on this. And imagine the differentiations are pinned. And that is the term of the activity. When you can pin them, nail them, crucify them, then, and not until then, have you got control. Control always means the subservience of some power to some other power. The power of the absolute up there, bringing back into focus. The power of the absolute has got them internal to itself and can easily control them with a very funny law, a law of resonance, whereby it can actually cause effects with minimal energy through similarities of frequencies. But the empirical ego identified with the body and the external contingent stimuli of other bodies has no such capacity. The body thumps, the body bashes, the body is crude compared with the absolute spirit. Now the problem is, for the individual, we are here, we are at the level of the individual. We tend to find it very hard work to differentiate the problem we have. Very hard. How do we relate? What is life? Well, the F and the V are the same letter. That's on voice. That's voice. So if I like to read this backwards, Hebraica, it's evil. And what does evil mean? Evil means frustration. It doesn't mean anything else. It means that life is going along and something stops it. And life defined it simply as anti-life. Reading this way is called Hebraica, reading that way is anti-Hebraica. That word life and live are the same word. And the word evil is the same word reversed. Not accidentally, because it is living individuals who define what life is. Now let's define it letter by letter. Life is labeling or working of an individual for the development of the triplicity of functions. If we take the V in an archaic Hebrew manuscript, funnily enough, written like that, we suspect immediately that it's our letter E. And it's the fifth letter of the alphabet in the Hebrew and in ours. And it means life itself, that letter. But it's threefold. Now, where we get form, sentience, and initiative, that is life. Form, sentience, initiative, life. This life, we bind ourselves to become an individual developing the triplicity of its functions. That is life. Now, how are we going to do this? First of all, we can't control anything unless we become conscious of it.
So we have to become conscious that we do think, and we do feel, and we do will or initiate changes. We think, we feel, we will. That is, we formulate, we sensitively become aware of, and we initiate. When we do this, in the simplicity, unific of consciousness, we are called a living being. Before I came down tonight, I was watching a bit of a nature film showing some fish on the reef, and they were making their nest. You think, are fish stupid? Well, this particular fish was a very clever fish, because around him he had a membrane. And his predators who would live on him and eat him hunt by smell. And this fish is very clever. This fish had a membrane on him. And when he wanted to go to sleep, he simply blew the membrane up so he was in a bubble. Was that clever? He actually blew a bubble up, and he's asleep inside him. But the predators can't smell him, because he's wrapped up inside his balloon. Isn't that marvelous? And it's a stupid fish that did it. And another one was busy digging itself a little hole, and he did it first by blowing on the sand, with lovely round lips, very sex symbol type lips. And he blew a hole in the sand. When he came to a stone, the sand having been blown away, the parasite slipped a little bit and picked up the spoon and moved it sideways. The latter was thinking, as good as Edward de Bono. And then he got the next bit, I've got one now, but one over there. And a fine sense of symmetry, right, left, back and forth. Then it blew again. Meanwhile, nearby there was another fat fish, which also had beautiful lips, and it was in an absolute ecstasy. Because it had gone to a part in the reef where there was the same kind of fish there that loved feeding on the little mites that infest bigger fish. So this big fish went, and the little fish came, and bit their edible mites off the big fish. And the fish was delighted in their biting. The big bite meant one less thing to bite me. And so I was going all over the place, and it's looking lovely. Brilliant intelligence, just a fish. And how can this happen? It happens because all intelligence is nothing but the absolute, operating within itself with absolute convergence of sentience and power. Human conceit of the empirical ego makes him think he's the only smart fellow in the world. So he'll kill everything. It's not human. The whale, the dolphin, everything human, if it moves, kill it. Because we are lords of the earth. That's the empirical ego. Now, this moron here has a problem. Because it is an individual, it is differentiating. There is sentience and there is power. With sentience, it sees millions of opportunities of the application of power. With the power in it, it could do them. There's actually nothing it couldn't do if it gathered itself together to do it. You know, there's a trick called misdirection of attention, where a strange magician holds his right hand up like that, looks at it, whilst his left hand puts something in his pocket. misdirection of attention. Well, seven types of government in the world specialize in misdirecting the attention of people so that they will never converge. We say, ban the militants. We don't want a left, 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 left. We want a right, right, right left. We want to retain control. So let us separate sentience and power. Now, the way we separate sentience and power in people is quite simple. Sentience is very fond of pleasure and is not past to pain. So if we offer a pleasure, sentience will say to power, go and get it. And if we offer a pain, sentience tends to say, go away from it. So if we color everything with pleasure and pain, we can dupe sentience into the misuse or non-use of its power. Now the individual here, monad, a spiritual being, which is nothing but the absolute precipitated, with the job of converging its sentience and power, because it is absolute, it is infinite, and because it is infinite, it vibrates with possibilities. Can you feel yourself vibrating with possibilities? Like Ken Dodd. He vibrates with possibilities. I have extreme difficulty in staying in one piece. I can feel my possibilities vibrating all over. Very hard to hold them down. And it's the same with you. Only you probably haven't told yourself that your potentials are vibrating. You say, I can do better than I'm doing. I know more than I know. And I know that if I get to know what it is that I know, I can express my power sentiently, sensitively, and I can become number one in the field. Yes, well, under what we call a survival situation, where you're really under threat, you think, well, no time for facade behavior now, or false modesty. Now I must gather myself together. Then you are a certified, divinized being, a divine human. If you do it all the time. You don't, because you're diverted by the diverters. The world is full of diverters who are deliberately plotting to make you not understand it. There was a bomb in Tehran the other day, wasn't there? Some said it's the people that don't like Khomeini. Khomeini's lot said it's the Americans. Now someone is misrepresenting it, either one or both, right? It's possible that Khomeini's supporters did it as well, to pretend that it wasn't them. There are so many possibilities. Now the moment you start thinking the possibilities like people do that read newspapers, their brains scatter. They consider all the possibilities. Sentience then vibrating, the power vibrates and disintegrates. Instead of converting itself to a oneness, remember that rule, purity of heart is to will one thing, one only. Instead of that, you find yourself considering my body, my feelings, my mental processes, my principles, my initiative, and you fall apart. It's this differentiation of stimuli coming at us that makes us fall apart and stops us realizing what we are. Yeshua said very, very clearly, is it not written in your scriptures, ye are gods? That means to say beings like we're talking about, absolute beings, individuated, with the problem of convergence of power and sentience in the individual, so that when it vibrates and splits, you pin it, you name it, you crucify it, so it can't run away with you. When people come to a point of death in a normal state, if they haven't worked in life to integrate the sentience and the power, what happens is the memories of all the things they've ever wanted to do operate simultaneously and they scatter. They disperse in infinity. They haven't gathered themselves together, and they're called mortals. A person that can hold that convergence is an immortal. Immortal means you're not falling to bits. The morphed part means that your substance M vibrates, and each little vibration gets nailed, and you identify with the nailings, you fall to bits. Now, if I bang this chair with my elbow, I remind myself I've got a physical body. If I feel it, I just think it's okay to you. The cells don't like it there, but I'm thinking it as a nail. Funny, the nail doesn't mind. I don't mind, because I'm demonstrating. But the cells don't seem to like it. They're ignorant pigs. Every one of them. Because it happens that unless we are prepared to train ourselves to put up with painful things, we are at the mercy of stimuli that threaten us with pain. And unless we are prepared to educate ourselves not to chase every pleasure that the TV offers them, not to see the swinging hip with Kia Ora or Engage. When we've got every cell that wants pleasure, I nail you. If you don't move unless I, that's here, say so. I am sentient power, power sentient of the absolute, and nobody's going to move unless I say so. Now, if you've got that amount of awareness and control of your own being, you can say to your body, behave, or your feelings, like or dislike, so what? Your mental processes, the product of stimulation of the body, your intellectual processes, a product of the primary stimulation of the monad. So what? I am penta. I am fivefold. I am pentaka. I'm a fivefold being in a field which is the six that holds the five together. Now we can all do it. It's just remembering. Remembering. Only remembering to do it. We can all do it. How do we remember to do it? Well, the Egyptian said, let's do an I. That's called a watch it eye. They said, remember it. You are an observer. The eye means observe. What do you observe? There is a center in an environment lidded, that is contained with the polarity up and down, with the brow here of precipitation. Yeah. And the straight attack on life and the curly attack on life. You can either go straight at the thing and declare what your aim is and be blocked for being so stupid, or you can wrap your purposes up so subtly that nobody can see what you're doing except you. You are a watchy eye, and your purpose is individuation, but so gradually that you catch yourself without being aware that you catch yourself. Yeshua, the Jewish fellow, said, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. Now that means the right hand, the will has a function inside it, a goal to be attained, and the intellective left side part will take it to bliss. They will be dubious, they will be unfaithful, they'll think of alternatives, they'll destroy the unity of the will if you let them know about it. Now, can you actually have in your will an intent to attain the goal and not tell yourself about it?
Well, of course you can. You do it all the time. It's the origin of the theory that there's an unconscious mind and a conscious mind. The conscious mind is the one you verbalize your purposes with. And underneath you've got another mind, which has lots of purposes it never mentions, because it knows that if it did, it would be contradicted. But it still knows that they are there. Aren't we peculiar? Individual. Very simple little straight line. But remember, the word straight means estura, est. It means to twist. You know very well you can't get your bullet to go straight unless you rifle the barrel. You must have a spiral line in it to twist it, to give it an inertia, to confer upon it a possibility, like a gyroscope, of staying in the same frame. In other words, straight means twist. You have a will to attain a certain level of development, to bring out a talent that's hidden, and if you voice it to somebody else, they'll contradict you, especially if it's a good idea. But inside your left side brain, you have an intellective tendency, and that tendency is analytic. Not only outside people contradict you, but the memories of the total contradictions of your whole ancestry are stimulated every time you say what you're going to do. So as soon as you voice something to yourself, I will do so and so tomorrow, all the negativities recorded of your ancestors spring up and say, will you? They can see millions of reasons why you shouldn't. When you go home tonight, tell yourself, I wake up at 6 in the morning, my powerful will, right on the dot, 6, I will wake up, I will jump out of bed and declare myself an individual. And next month report to me whether you managed it. There will be 10 to say, what for? I know I could do it if, when I can set my arm off. It doesn't mean I'll hear it. But I could set it. So why bother? If I do set it, maybe I won't hear it. Then I may discourage myself. I might destroy my faith in my own will. Do I want to destroy my faith now? So why threaten myself? Maybe I shouldn't try to do this thing and upset myself like this. I tell you what, I'll think about it tonight. Tomorrow night, I'll reconsider it. This is what we call human, all too human. Now, the whole of our problem is on that little diagram. We are living beings. Our life is nothing but this. A triplicity, think, feel, will, which is a potential until we've actualized it, has got to be converged into the individual, and we must bind ourselves to it. That L, that lambda, that lamed, bind ourselves and stimulate ourselves. If we don't stimulate ourselves to greatness, who's going to do it? Our best enemy? Our closest, jealousest, most envious friend? Are they going to make us transcend our performance so that we shine and they don't? I don't think so. It means we've got to do it individually. Nobody but the individual can do it. This is a tremendously horrible thing. No one but the individual can save himself. In Buddhism, that is called the Hinayana, the little path, the narrow path. There's another one called Mahayana. Everybody can do it for everybody else. And we have a concept called the Bodhisattva. That's a lot of thousands ago about. There could be Buddhas. Only they're not being, because you know why? They're too busy making you into Buddhas. Anybody who swears, I will not go into Nirvana, into heaven, until everybody else is in, because I'm so kind, so generous. I want them all in before I go in. I can't bear their suffering when I'm up there and they're down here. And behind that is a dirty little trick. If I go to heaven and I'm up there, and the universe is an absolute vibratory system, and I'm sitting there in Nirvana, the vibratory miseries of the rest of the universe enter my being in the middle of my meditation, and they shatter me. The prayers of the people are sent to God. So any person that can get himself developed to the point of going to heaven, if he gets there, he's in trouble. Do you know what that is there? Three trays: in, pending, out. The pending is like this, you know what it is? Prayers of people. Lord, save us. The in tray is filling up, and you have to move it as soon as you see it to the pending, because you can't deal with it. The out tray, for that one, you have to incarnate. Because everybody wants help down on earth from an incarnate Buddha. We don't want a Buddha up there on a throne, so we want him down here. So when we look at Mahayana, when we look at the great vehicle of Buddhism, we find it full of helpful saints, bodhisattvas. And nobody is doing it for themselves. But only the self can do it for the self, the individual. Now, if somebody asks you for a bit of good advice, you can give it to them. Doesn't mean that you've any control over what they do with it. You can give it, but it will not be saving unless the person who receives it takes it individually and substantializes it by their own effort, with their own sentience and their own power, self-incarnate. You have to be able to say, I am absolute sentient power. When you've got that, you've nothing else to worry about. Just go about being a cosmic nuisance, like all the prophets and the great religious beings who naturally deserve to be stoned to death or crucified or something for disturbing everybody who wants to be saved. Only people in dire straits, and only them for a moment. I remember a Welshman telling me on one occasion that he had a spiritual experience. He'd been an unbeliever all his life, and he fell in a river and he couldn't swim. And when he was sinking, he shouted, "Oh God, save me!" And at that moment, the fellow came by in a coracle, and he was saved. And he was so excited on being saved, he was thanking the man, and then his feet were on the shore, and he forgot to say thank you. Being saved and no thank you. And he said afterwards, you know, it's very funny. In extreme survival situations, you remember God. But the moment that the extremities have been removed, you don't remember God. You know why? You got a wife and kids and a job to do. And you know perfectly well that God would prefer you to look after them than bother him. Now we have the total philosophy of the world in a simple little diagram, but we have the horrible problem of putting it into operation. We think that we have a body with separable feelings, separable mentations, separable comprehensive intellections, separable volitions. We think that. They are not separable. What they are is stressable. You can focus on your body and deliberately ignore the fact that you're feeling, or you can focus on your feeling and forget your body, or you can get a train of mental thought and follow that along and forget that you're feeling or that you've got a body, or you can become abstractly intellectual, like a solver of algebraic problems about the ultimate constitution of matter, or you can be so willfully pushing you forget everything else. You can do those, but they're all co-present. Never do they separate. So that we have to remind ourselves these five are co-present at all times, and it's our fault if we get into trouble later by forgetting this elementary fact that they are simultaneously co-presented.
And then has to work its way up, upwards.
And
you tell it from the top to the down.
But going from the opposite way, is that really the way we come? Really from that crucified series of bumps? And then has to get ourselves into the individual, into the chaotic state, to be able to move to the absolute. Yes, but you see, the baby has no such definition. So the baby is like the absolute. Only it is not reflective. You know that a baby's only got one will, that's its own. It's only got one viewpoint, its own. It hasn't got its mother's viewpoint, or its father's viewpoint, or the state viewpoint. It's got its own viewpoint. If the baby is absolute, as such, it's not reflective. And therefore it has to be pushed through the stress strain, because it's in the body with these functions, but it's not reflective. So it's not differentiated, its feelings, its meditations, its intellections, its volitions, it's all one. So it operates exactly like the absolute, except non-reflectively.
Well, those
are geometrical analogies, aren't they? They're helpful to think about, but they are not the same thing as the convergence of sentient power. There, the sentient power is unsplit. Here, it is split and presents itself as sentience and power with the problem, how do you climb up there to become absolute? And you're being rattled by the condensation of sentience and power inside you, so that you apparently split into a fivefold being. But that split is an illusion. It's only a matter of stress. And it's your interest in the particular. Doesn't take the most obvious thing, sexuality. The lowest level of sexuality is believing it's to do with rubbing one body on another. Yeah? You know there are beings that believe that. The next level, I'm disgusted with that fellow. He thinks that rubbing parts of anatomy on other parts of anatomy without feeling, it's the bottom. I'm sensitive, you know. I never stroke a girl unless I like her. I'm very refined. If I don't like her, I don't touch her. Such refinement. My eldest brother used to say he would never take a girl to bed unless he loved her. And I said, you mean pig. It's sensitivity, isn't it? There's another kind that I can't take a girl to bed unless I can talk to her about the position of the Labour Party. You know that's true. You know that. Unless I have something to talk about it as well. You know why? Because that's so terribly crude. And it's not fair to be conditioned merely by liking, is it? So if you chat them up as well, and then the next fellow, he said, I can't possibly approach a girl unless she has a PhD. You know they exist. Find a few of them in universities. And they won't look at a girl unless she's intelligent. And has done a history of philosophy. And then they were saying, well, I'm very high now. And then there's a fellow that says, I can't bother with a girl unless she's volitional. Unless she seizes the initiative. And me, and carries me off. You know, I knew a girl like that. She used to train tigers. She was a tiger trainer, a negress, beautiful looking girl, marvellous figure, marvellous face. She was called Phil. All the fellows I knew who knew her were terrified. You've only got to see her in her act and you'd give up immediately. She sees your initiative unless you covered it up quickly. And those are points of view, aren't they? But the reality is that those five are simultaneously co-presented. If you focus on one and think that's it, the others are complaining. You know, every time you focus on one, to the exclusion of the others, four start screaming. And they can do all kinds of funny things. They can bend, stretch, contract, distort, tear, living tissue in their complaints and ruin the whole situation. Nothing but the simultaneous co-presentation of that being is enough to make what you call the perfect relation. Now it's obvious it's very hard work to gather this together, take the differences and assimilate them in the spiritual monad there. But if you do, you can then see the sentience and power in you is the absolute having created for you an opportunity precisely to do that. That is to say, you have become a representative of the absolute invisible eternal in the relative temporal. Visible. God made manifest in the flesh. The goddess manifest in the flesh. Shakti, Parvati. What does it feel like to think that you have infinite potential and all you need is an awareness of that fact? And then you can start moving according to it. How does it feel? Very dangerous. Because there are so many millions of people in the world who don't know about it. And if you start operating in that manner, what's going to happen to their opinion of you? You can't.
You can't.
You can. Al-Halaj said on one occasion in public, I am the truth. I was promptly crucified for that. He was only demonstrating to a few people what happens if you do. If you shout out, what have we been discussing tonight? What's the lowest pub in Manchester? Can anybody tell me? Don't betray yourselves. This is abandoned on the wall, or doesn't it exist anymore? You go into that pub wherever it is. You don't need to confess. You just secretly go. Dress like they dress and go in. And then stand on top of a table, 45 with a whiskey or two, and tell them, I'm now going to tell you the real key to successful utilization of alcohol. And then start describing that. What's going to happen? No, seriously, what's going to happen? I tried it. You get thumped. You let me show you my bruises. Yeah. Experiment. Well, the child is all one like that, but it's in the body and it's non-reflexive. It doesn't know what it's got, so it tries everything simultaneously. For instance, when it tries to walk, it puts its tongue out and waves its arms about and looks over its shoulders as if it's being appreciated by mama. And the process falls over its latest toy and bangs its nose. And it's only through that kind of experience that that child is driven finally to consider, I'm an individual being in a body with these functions, and they have to be gathered together. And then you're an individual with this problem. But unless you are introduced to the concept of sentient power polarized from the absolute, you can't rise above that level. You become an egotistic striver for perfection, which you can't get. Because that's the only way it can demonstrate the plurality. Remember, it says if the seed doesn't fall to the ground and die, it abides alone. Now, the absolute, in its absoluteness, prior to creation, is equivalent to nothing whatever. Think of absolute potentialities for all manner of marvelous things not doing it. How does it feel? Terrible. Terra. It needs earth. Terra. It needs terrification. So what it does is vibrate, and in the vibrations it produces interference patterns. You know, in the case of the Kleveny figures, you produce nodal points, and onto the nodal points are shuffled the sand particles, and there, where the sand particles are, is apparently a body, but the body is on the nodal point, and all around it is vibrating, but not shuffling the sand. This means that your physical body, the very grossness of it, is the least powerful. It's a point of node, point of no differentiation. Now how you draw a wave like this. You suspend the string between two points like that, and then you pluck it, it vibrates. You pluck it in the middle, it will swing. The nodal points are there and there. If you pluck it at the proper distance here, it will vibrate like that, and you'll have a node, a node, a node. Now the nodes are where the matter is shuffled to. Your gross body, the visible body you've got, is the least powerful because it's on nodal precipitation point. But that is the beginning of individuality. Individuality begins with a feeling of personal impotence. So the absolute precipitates centers of personal impotence. And they are seeds of reflexive individuals after they have been educated. They have to start with personal impotence, otherwise their conceit will be boundless. The baby has to feel indebted to the mother that feeds it. Impotence means inner power held down. It's there, but it can't come out except under the appropriate conditions. And what do you think about that? We wind up and say, that's a nice shape, go, fly a kite. You mean what does kite mean? KT. Lock it up and crucify it, and then you can fly it. Until you've got perfect control over your own organic reaction, you can't be divinized. So the ascetic life, so often tried in an erroneous way, the ascetic life is the life of necessary self-control of the energies of the absolute within the incarnate individual. So let's think about that till our next half. Of the energies of the absolute within the incarnate individual.